Under advisement. We're going to go on to case number four, and that is 023211, May Campbell versus William Henderson. Morning, Mr. Andre.
Good morning, Judge.
Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. This is a situation involving a claim of hostile work environment. And fortunately, the Supreme Court has clarified the whole area of hostile work environment just last June in the Morgan decision, National Passenger Railroad. I believe that when Judge Pallmeyer made her decision, that she probably had not incorporated that decision in the opinion that she wrote, at least it's not mentioned in any way. And I think that that is what helps us to understand better why, respectfully, she missed the mark. This is a situation where my client claimed that she was repeatedly subjected to statements, specific statements, by her supervisor that she was going to suffer as a result of filing complaints of discrimination. She filed complaints on her own behalf. She was a union steward. She filed complaints on behalf of others as well. As a result of that, she was treated then differently with respect to her leave allowances over the course of years. Her injury compensation claims were held up.
By the way, did she get compensated? Did that ultimately
She never did. Off? She still never did. They refused to honor doctor's requests and restrictions on her work due to the injury that she suffered, which was clearly work-related. She tripped over electrical wires at the job and injured her shoulder, as I recall it. And she was not allowed, as other workers were, to call in and to indicate that she was ill. And what's important on that point is that this is not just simply someone who has no medical expertise or no ideas about illness who is just claiming I'm sick. This is a situation, she's an occupational nurse. She's worked for the Postal Service for years. She actually determines whether other persons are sick. So it's not just blowing in the wind for her to call in and say that she's sick and can't come in. And then there were unjustified disciplinary write-ups that she received. And this happened repeatedly over the course of years. And that's why National Passenger is so important, because under some of the standards that you normally look to determine whether or not a person has been discriminated against, in what Justice Thomas in his analysis on the Morgan case pointed out, where you talk about discrete acts, then you look for specific adverse actions that take place. The person is fired. The person is demoted. But as he pointed out in Part B of the majority opinion, that's not required for the proof of a hostile work environment claim. As a matter of fact, he pointed out that you may have a series of actions that have taken place, none of which independently is a discrete discriminatory act that would fall under the standards that are normally govern a discrimination case, and that may take place over years because of the fact that the environment may have been poisoned over a course of time. And it is that makes for the adverse action, if we want to call it that. It's that constant harassment, that constant picking and jabbing and denial of the same standards as everyone else. And it's for that reason that Judge Pallmeyer, again, respectfully missed the mark in this case, because what Judge Pallmeyer did was she took leave allowances and said, well, that's not an adverse action. She took the injury compensation refusal and said, well, that's not an adverse action. And she essentially analyzed the case under what Justice Thomas pointed out in the Morgan case as though it was under Part A.
Forgive me, Mr. Andrew.
Sure.
The injury compensation claim, Ms. Campbell alleged that Mr. Ellis interfered with that claim. How?
Well, as I understand it,
I mean, is it in the record? How?
I'm not certain specifically whether it's concretely in the record. I just don't recall, to be honest with you. But I do understand that the supervisor has to sign off on injury compensation claims. So they have the ability to hold up an injury compensation claim. I don't know whether he just didn't sign it, or he didn't send it after he signed it, or he didn't fill some paper out. I'm not sure on that specific point.
So the district court never got evidence on that?
No.
And then I wanted to ask, in terms of the call-in, because she alleges that there were these other people that were called in and they were able to get sick leave on a phone call, were there any specific individuals identified in the record?
Again, I don't recall. I do
it's
believe
not in the brief, so that's
right.
Why I'm asking.
No, I don't know that she identified an individual and said this individual in the submissions that we made to the court. But she is in fact in a position based upon what she's been there for years, based upon her experience and seeing what is allowed by other persons, she would be in a position to know that firsthand.
Well, but we need some evidence, don't we, Mr. Andre?
Well, of course you
it's
do.
It's a real problem because another allegation is that Mr. Ellis refused to honor her medical work restrictions, but there's no documentation of these restrictions.
Well, in fact, I believe there is evidence of that.
What is it?
I don't know specifically what it is, but there is, in fact, in the record, she submitted in our response to the motion for summary judgment the statement that she submitted from her doctors as to what those restrictions were. So there is evidence in the record that indicates what her limitations were and what the doctor said about her condition. So that is in the record.
How did he dishonor them?
He simply said that he did not accept those as being valid. The U.S. Attorney's Office argues that they don't comply with specific regulations and specific, under the CFR, the rules that they may have or the specific regulations that they set. However, the evidence makes it clear, and there was evidence presented of other statements submitted by other employees, that those statements they sufficed, and they were no better than the statements that she submitted. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you're going to allow statements to be honored which are deficient under the standards of the regulations for one person, then you should allow it for others as well.
Now, are those people named or identified in your brief? The people that she...
They're not identified in the brief. They are a part of the submission. The Local 56.1 statement does have specific documents from her and from other persons showing their medical documentation. So again, we feel that the standards were met under the Morgan case. The defendant also raised an issue which was not raised by the trial court, alleging that there was a waiver. We addressed that in our reply brief. We would basically stand on our brief with respect to that issue because it never was raised by the trial court. This is simply something injected by the defendant. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Please.
Surely, Mr. Andre, and thank you. Mr. Hale?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'd like to apologize in advance. I'm having a little trouble with my voice this morning.
Fine.
Let's make a shorter argument.
Okay. We won't complain.
Okay. We would submit, Your Honor, that you should affirm the district court decision in this case for two reasons. In the first place, the only issue which Mr. Andre seeks to pursue in this court is a hostile work environment claim. That claim was waived for the plaintiff's failure to raise it in her complaint or in her answers to interrogatories. Second, even though we failed to plead this claim, Judge Pallmeyer addressed it on the merits in a lengthy and careful decision and granted summary judgment in favor of the Postal Service on the ground that the plaintiff had failed to present evidence to support her allegations. And we would submit that if you address the merits, you should affirm on the same grounds. With respect to the waiver issue, Campbell's complaint alleged that she was denied or she disputed a leave request over a two-year period on three discrete occasions and that she was disciplined twice as a result. That's all that she said in her complaint. It didn't say anything about a hostile work environment theory, and it didn't allege the facts that she used then in her summary judgment response to try and make out a hostile work environment. Contrary to the suggestion that Mr. Andrew made in his reply brief, we're not suggesting there's a heightened pleading standard that applies in Title VII cases. We're just saying that the plaintiff has to identify what the employment action is that she's challenging. And also in discovery, we submitted an interrogatory to Ms. Campbell asking her to list everything that the Postal Service had done to her that she considered to be discriminatory or retaliatory. And in response to that, even though she had the opportunity to consult with her lawyer and take her time answering it, all she listed there were the same leave denials and discipline. And she didn't say anything about a hostile work environment or the other matters she's relying on now. Only after the Postal Service filed a summary judgment motion and demonstrated that the allegations in the complaint were without merit did she decide to switch to this hostile work environment theory. And apart from establishing waiver, I think that context is important to put the merits of the claim in context. Campbell presented a moving target in the district court. This case wasn't about a hostile work environment. If she really felt that her work environment was so terrible she couldn't come to work, she would have said something about that in her complaint when she had the chance to plead it. And when she had the chance to sit down with her lawyer and answer interrogatories, she would have listed those things. The principal argument Mr. Andrew made is that Judge Pallmeyer erred by failing to consider the combined effect of all the discrimination that he proved. The answer to that is, as Judge Pallmeyer found, he didn't present evidence in support of any of these allegations that he was making. Only evidence that was presented concerned the discrete leave denials, which were alleged in the complaint. And actually, that was presented because we presented it in our summary judgment motion. And as to that, the district court found the leave was properly denied because she was needed at work on those occasions and didn't present medical documentation to support her absence. And there wasn't any evidence of similarly situated people being treated differently. As to the other matters that were discussed this morning regarding the injury compensation claim and failure to honor work restrictions, there wasn't evidence submitted in support of those either. And finally, as to the comments, those Judge Pallmeyer found were too innocuous to constitute a hostile work environment by themselves. So for all those reasons, we'd ask that the decision of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. 2 minutes, Mr. Andre.
Mr. Hale says that there's no heightened pleading requirement, and yet he wants you to tell him in the complaint what your theory of recovery is. You can't have it both ways. If there's no heightened pleading requirement, and I'm going to kill this name, Swierkiewicz, I think, says there isn't a heightened pleading requirement. If that's true, that's true. There isn't a heightened pleading requirement. And counsel says, well, we never brought anything out until a summary judgment motion came up. Well, that's when you bring things up. That's when you're being challenged as to what it is that you intend to bring up, either that or at a trial. So there's nothing unusual about bringing that up there rather than in the complaint. Again, that's just simply not required. And again, counsel still makes the same mistake. He continues to look at and analyze on the basis of each discrete act. And counsel says that there's no presentation of hostile work environment. Well, she may not have used that terminology, but she focused on the same points that are the basis of the claim for the hostile work environment, and she indicated those were the things that she was complaining about. The fact that she didn't use the language hostile work environment doesn't mean that she can't bring it up. For all those reasons, we feel, and with regard to the waiver issue again, we, as we pointed out, the Swierkiewicz, and killing that name, case, in my mind, says that we really don't have to plead that. That's not a requirement for pleading. We therefore ask for a reversal of the decision.
Mr. Andre and Mr. Hill, thank you both very much. And the case will be taken under advisement.